Winning big accounts quickly. Winning large accounts, particularly through ABM, is often a lengthy and hugely resource-intensive process. But rather than going head-to-head and competing on the same terms, what if you took the gloves off and rewrote the rules of engagement? What if, instead of having a selection of key accounts, you focused your firepower on just the one? Marketers who work closely with sales teams continually outperform their competitors. So if you have an open mind and are up for embracing a rebel-like disregard for how things are done normally, the concept of account-based selling could prove to be the most exciting new concept that you'll have come across in a long time. Hello, good afternoon. My name's James Rostance, and this is the 414 Live. It's for you as a professional B2B marketer, whether you work in-house doing awesome stuff at a B2B company, or if you work at an agency doing equally cool stuff there, or indeed if you're a company executive with a hands-on role in your company's sales and marketing activities. And every week I speak with some of the greatest and most interesting minds in B2B marketing so that you can directly expand and enhance your professional knowledge with every single episode. This week is quite a special one because this is very much a extension or even perhaps a rethinking of the concept of ABM. And I'm very looking forward to sharing it with you. But before we now cross down to the southwest of England, where my guest is standing by live, let's do the roll call of honour for new subscribers to the show, and with that, equally, new friends of the show. Roll call of honour this week, giving a big shout out and thank you to Wayne Leacock, Andrew Last, Michael Chidsey, Gwen Lafarge, Roger Jackson, David Newman, Arlette Lee, Chris Pardo, and Matthew Carter. Thank you very much, you guys. If you haven't subscribed already, or indeed if you want to get on it as well, hit up the 414.net and you can subscribe there by email. Or indeed, if you're on YouTube, I think everyone says these days, smash the like button. If you're on LinkedIn, however, hit follow. I think it's a lot more of a reserved affair. So whatever you want, www.the414.net or the like and subscribe on whatever channel you're watching now. So with all of that said, let's now cross down to the southwest of England to the beautiful town of Plymouth. Please welcome Mr. Dean Seddon. Dean, good afternoon.
Hi, James. That was an awesome introduction, by the way. I need to pay you for that. That was really, really good.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Well, you know what? I'm genuinely excited about everything that you've got ready to share. For everyone watching right now, myself and Dean have had a chat before today, obviously, to prep what we're going to cover. And seriously, he has got some golden content to share with you. And well, without further ado, let's really jump straight into it. So, Dean, could you set the stage, please, for what you see as being wrong with perhaps the way that a lot of sales and marketing takes place and how marketing plays into that?
Ooh, I could make a lot of friends and a lot of enemies here. What I found is, you know, the common thing that everybody says is true. Sales and marketing are often totally disconnected and one drives the other. And they don't really, in a lot of companies, work together. And I came from a sales background and felt frustrated that I didn't have the assets that I needed because I was a rubbish cold caller. So I wanted to find another way to call to get sales. So I needed help. But when I went to marketing, often what I got was very corporate and didn't really do what I wanted it to do. And so I don't know whether it's just me, but I meet lots of people who say the same thing. And I thought there's got to be an easier way of doing this without just relying on picking up the phone and hammering numbers, trying to get people to talk to me. There's got to be a way where I can go, if I use a bit of marketing and a bit of sales, can I make people want to talk to me? And that's really where this all kind of started maybe 20 years ago. And it's just got a bit more developed and defined as the internet and social media has developed, really.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
Oh, I was going to follow off on that, and I can see where this is going, which is, I guess, the polar opposite of the scattergun approach of just trying to hit up everyone and running a numbers game.
Yeah. So if you think about what businesses do, salespeople need targets. Absolutely, they need targets. They need, you know, a benchmark of what success looks like. But sometimes what happens is marketing gets really, really busy and salespeople get really, really pressured to hit numbers. So they just do whatever they can with what they've got. And inadvertently, a business can develop they can have all the policies, all the playbooks, all of that stuff, all the marketing assets. But if you inadvertently create that culture of we need to close deals, which is right, it can turn a good sales process into churn and burn, as we would call it. So what we started to think about is how can we do this in a way whereby we connect the marketing and sales function into a social selling method. And for a number of years, we just trained people into do that and did it ourselves. And then we went, well, how do you do this in a way to land a big corporate account? How can you move that oil tanker and get them to pay attention to you and think that this is a good idea and they want to talk to you? Mm-hmm. Rather than doing the dialing and going through what is a, you know, almost like a soul destroying process to sell to a big corporate, because very often you get a really positive meeting, it goes silent for months, and then it comes back again, and then it just goes on forever. And so what we did is we'll think, well, what are the key things that you have to do to get that oil tanker to turn quicker? And that's really kind of the process we've done. We didn't want to call it account-based marketing, because marketing implies that it's a long process. Where so we went, well, account-based sales. So we're looking to sell to this account. What do we need? What marketing assets or sales assets do we need to actually make this work? And then how can we get that oil tanker to see that they need us? And that's effectively what we've done, but we've done it in a hyper-focused way around a particular business or a particular, we had this chat and earlier, and you said, what does your prospect list look like for your pipeline? And he said, you said, have you got the top 100 people you're working on? I said, I've got 687 companies and we've mapped it out for 5 years. And that sounds like really kind of analytical, and it needs to have that analytical dimension. But when it comes to the sales bit, it's actually quite emotional. It's actually quite getting under the skin of the customer. And maybe, we'll have a look at that for you if we got time.
100%. And I love that as an answer where you gave that earlier. Because the concept of the Dream 100, fantastic thing. And that really does refine down your activities. Was it 637 over the course of time? I think what would be good in that case is... Well, could you take us through how you actually start about setting up this kind of mission, if you will?
Okay. So the first thing I do, and we've kind of boiled this down to, doesn't matter how big the company is, at the end of the day, there are human beings struggling with particular issues. There are human beings in a big company trying to make something happen. So you think about the reality of it. You've got a big, I don't know, FTSE listed, NASDAQ listed company, and you're going, we need to get them to see the value of us. That's the first thing. We need to get them to see the value of us. The reality check is no amount of your portfolio will help them do that. The thing that moves people is when they join the dots and they realize, you fix that problem and you get us to that outcome. That's what really matters. And people go, well, what is my outcome? What is my problem? You just have to do the research. You do the research. You look at the company, look at what's going on. You know, there's enough information out there on the internet. You can start to map out what's going wrong in these organizations. And I mean, what's going wrong. You won't tell them it's going wrong, of course, but you will be mapping it out and going, okay, they're with X supplier. They're with our competitor, right? So we know that they've got a contract or they're working with that company that we want to dislodge. Effectively, we're trying to go and say we want our prospect to believe that we are a better choice than their existing people that they know. That's a big job. So the first thing we have to do is we have to build that kind of know, like, trust and awareness piece. But what I thought about doing is when you approach a big corporate, you have the first meeting and they go away and go, that's interesting. And then they go consider it. And then the vetting process begins. Then do we think we can work with these people? Do they think they can deliver? All of that stuff has to happen. And there's a load of paperwork you can give to people about that. But actually, most people don't believe paperwork anyway. They look at the paperwork and go, what's the saying? They decide with emotion and justify with logic.
Yeah.
And you can make a statistic, you know, people say to me, oh, tenders, they're a competitive process. Well, yeah. And somebody at the end of that tender process looks at your document and their document and decides, shall we just score them a 1 or a 2 for that? And should we score them a 3 or a 4? There's emotions involved in all of these decision-making processes. So what if we could make the emotional justifications easier so that can move faster? And I don't believe the myth that corporate selling has to be slow, because I've seen companies move really fast when they want to. Mm-hmm. It's only when the impetus isn't there to change quickly. So by mapping the pain points of this status quo, as we call it, their current reality with the current supplier, the current way of working, and starting to think about how they might be thinking about it. That's the first bit. Pains, outcomes, what are they trying to achieve? What might be going wrong? And how are they thinking about it?
Yeah. Okay. With that process, could I just jump in? Who's actually doing this? Is this a sales function, marketing, or is this where sales and marketing are getting together and working on this?
It's got to be a combination, but if the salesperson doesn't get this, it won't work. Because once you map that, and you understand the account that you're going after and you map those things, you test them. I test them on LinkedIn. So I test them on LinkedIn and I see how people respond and I see how the company responds. But that then, once you've got your foot in the door by using those pain points and all of that stuff, that's the key thing that will get the prospect to move, to take action too. Mm-hmm. And so if you use these tactics to get the meeting and you don't use the same messaging and the same value proposition for that client all the way through, you'll lose them. And you'll lose them in that process. So the same thing that got you the appointment is the same thing that will get them to move, which is the same thing that will get them to decide, which is the same thing that gets them to change.
So this is very much being consistent with your messaging right the way through. Very much, I can see that just how beautifully in parallel it is with the concept of account-based marketing. But you really are focusing your firepower on that and tailoring it to the to that particular or prospect. For the sake of clarity, it is then the concept of tailoring everything to that one person is the real magic in all of this. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Once you know the key messages that work, yeah, I've seen this done and I've demonstrated this on somebody. They gave me their LinkedIn account. I said, who do you want to talk to? Yeah. And I said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to write a post. We're going to go through that whole value proposition thing. And actually, it's not that hard to, from the outside, to work out what's going wrong in the inside of that company. It's not very hard at all. Mm-hmm. Every customer, every prospect thinks their business is unique. Yeah, I'm going to bust a myth. It's not true. It's not true. But number one, it's not true. If whatever sector you're in, of course you have to treat the prospect like their issues and challenges are unique. But we know full well that industry sectors, all of these different businesses have very common things. So what you can learn from one company can apply to another company. Mm-hmm. So you just test them. So, I did this with one person. We wrote some posts, particularly about that, connected with the company, connected with a few people, no messages whatsoever. And within 2 days, we'd had inbound messages from that company.
Wow.
That's how quick it can work.
I really like that as a proof element, really, from what you touched upon just moments ago with how things can be turned around very quickly, which is an interesting concept when you also you compare that to, I really like the analogy of an oil tanker, which generally don't move very quickly.
Yeah.
Okay, so how did
they do if there's a big rock in front of them?
I've been known to. So how did this account then progress from that point?
So they had the first meeting. This company employs 63,000 employees around the world. We did the first couple of pain point centric pieces of content, made sure they got it in front of them. They booked their meeting. They've got the conversation going. In fact, that same demo I'm talking about, their meeting is with the global account director tomorrow.
Okay.
First meeting. Now, in that meeting, the most important point is you validate those pain points that got you there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What got you on that call was the post or the way you delivered that message. And so now you're going to, you know, I'm a northerner, so I'll say things in a particular way. Yeah. Is somebody says to me, side thing, I'm a northerner. Why do all your analogies seem to replicate violence or muggings? And I said, I'm from the north. we call it twisting the knife, right? And the reason we call it twisting the knife is if somebody's in pain and you found it, you know, if somebody's hurt themselves or something like that, and then you start to move and play around with it, you start to feel it even more. Uh-huh. And so by the end of that first call, if you can accurately diagnose the problem and you can accurately diagnose what's going on in their business with them, they feel that you understand them. Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, it might be that you've actually got here by just studying their industry. But once you get to that call and you clarify it, then there's a key moment where you have to quantify the cost of inaction versus the benefit of a decision. If you don't know this and you can't get the prospect to understand that, it's never going to happen. And that's when the oil tanker goes even slower because it's like they don't understand the imperative. And you might think, no, these are serious businesses. These are big, huge businesses. Of course, they're smart people. They are, but they're still human beings. They're still human beings who go, actually, I've got my task list. I've got all of these other things going on. It's only when they realize the cost of inaction will they actually go and put it to the top of their task list.
I love that. I know Stephen Tierney's talked about that at length before now, B2B sales trainer, about how the magic of contrast in a sales cycle is a crucial element. So you're factoring that in, by the sounds of it, specifically into this process. Is that correct?
Yeah. So it's got to be in there because that's what gives you the speed. Yeah.
With you.
So if I can help that prospect, they've come to me because they've resonated with something I've put out. Yeah. I've done the work in building the interactions and building the connections on LinkedIn, say. So they're now resonating with me because I've put a pain point post out there that they now see and resonate with. I'll then go to a call and clarify that with them. But what I do with the cost of inaction is try to get them to tell me what the cost of inaction is. Not in a kind of forced way, but just go, so how big of a deal is this? Try and get them to quantify it in whatever way, shape, or form they can quantify it, whether it's a time issue, a reach issue, whatever the issue is in their business, you know, a sales target issue. I get them to quantify it. And then I can say, so what's the importance of that in terms of, if you could get here, how big of a priority is it? Is it nothing? Is it a little bit? Is it the game changing thing? Where does it sit for you? Because, you know, if you're happy to live with it, if it doesn't matter so much, then leave it alone. And I'll tell people, don't do anything. If it's not a big problem, don't do anything. And that's then they go, no, it is.
That does garner a lot of respect, I can well imagine, from our prospects. I should mention at this point, by the way, I appreciate everyone watching, listening right now, that this show is for B2B marketers. And what we're covering right here is very much leaning towards sales. However, as we've basically promised at the top of the show today, is that this is taking a different approach. And I think, Dean, you'd be, would you agree that this is sales taking the lead in this sense, but completely backed up and supported, and it wouldn't work without marketing fully behind them on this?
Well, the bit that sales doesn't get from this, and this is where marketing can really back them up, mm-hmm. is that the salesperson instinctively wants to go for the kill. Yeah,
right.
They instinctively want to do that, and the marketing has to be the reins of going. Principles of marketing. Yeah, we want to land subliminal messaging. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
The reason why businesses, Coca-Cola, just invests in billboards with people drinking Coke is so that people get the message. And the fundamental underlying principle of this is the value proposition, those pain points you map, that salesperson now needs assets, content and resources that they can put out and dangle in front of these prospects. Mm-hmm. And they can't do that. And they probably don't always value the importance of just being known and being known for a period of time. So I might invest 3 to 4 weeks of content for one particular account before I get that conversation. Sometimes it's like 2 days and that's brilliant. That's perfect. But I've had one, for an example, I've been working on for 3 years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've been sowing content out there. They bit, as we would say, on a piece of content. They spent £200 buying something from our shop. I followed up with them and see how it went. We booked on a call. A month later, they'd spent £100,000.
Wow. Dean told me this one before we started the show, but I was my reaction was just wow. That is very, very cool. I would love to ask you in a second actually how you actually set about planning this, because there's got to be planning, and I know on the marketing side we love planning content, preparation and then publishing, but before we do, I just want to cover Stuart Winterteer. He's joining us on the show today. Ooh. It's a big comment. Stuart, thanks for joining us. Good to have you along, man. He says, the more I think about it and see the disjoint between sales and marketing, the more bonkers it seems. Absolutely. I'm more of the opinion that if a company succeeds in joining them together in harmony, they'll probably dominate their market.
Yeah.
Very, very wise words. Yeah. And this is very much in line with it. So, thanks for that, Stuart. That's awesome. Well, Dean, could you talk us through then how you would actually then schedule and plan this type of precision attack on a target?
Yeah. Shall I share my screen? Does that work?
Yeah. Here we go. Right. I'll call it up. Here we go. Right. Bang. Right. So we're looking at your screen full.
Hopefully it's coming up okay. You see it? Cool. First thing is you've chosen a company, you've picked a company, and you're now starting to do the research around the pains, the challenges. If you know who they're dealing with already, what's the weak points of the competitor? What could be some of the issues? So for an example, I did this with a company that is a large scale. They do CRMs. And I said, let's pick holes in the competitors. Where are the weak spots? Where are the things that are annoying them? Where are the things that are slowing them down? And then we start to map out. Now, and LinkedIn's brilliant for this because it's the biggest B2B database in the world. And so with Sales Navigator, you can map out the majority of the people who are influential in making that decision. It's not just, we call it, there's tiers. There's the people who can help you. There's the people who you need to talk to get the meetings and everything. And then there's the people who sign it off. And so what often happens is we'll connect with, we'll get a conversation going with one of them, and then it stalls further down the line. And you almost have to do your process and your pitch and all that kind of stuff again. So what we do is map the whole account and go, we've got tier three, tier two, tier one. Tier three is the people who could be helpful in the relationship. Tier two are the people who we're going to have to talk to, meet with. And tier one are the people who are going to sign it off, whether it be a purchase order, whether it be somebody who has to validate the proposal, whatever it is. And we start now building those relationships before we ever pitch or even try and have a conversation or meeting. We're growing our network on LinkedIn, just interacting with them low key to get them connected so they start to see our content. So the mapping is the first bit. Then we go to being known by the prospects. So this is where you start to use that value proposition, that pain point, and start posting about it. The point of contact has to post about it. So this is where marketing can help. Mm-hmm. Marketing and sales can work together on the value proposition stuff, specifically for the account. And then marketing can help roll that out into what I call pain point documents and things that really agitate. Anybody in marketing is familiar with copywriting. You'll know about the agitation method of copywriting. That's one of the key things that helps this thing move, is using agitation and that way of writing. So you don't go in all guns blazing, promoting. You actually draw people in by talking about the issues with particular things to do with your product or service, or potentially the current reality of the prospect. And you literally watch those people start to show up on your posts. And that what you'll find is more and more and more of them will start to show up because of algorithms and all that kind of stuff. So you're now starting to get the attention of these people. And what you'll find is as you do this, you'll do what I call an agitation or pain point post. It'll go absolutely ballistic. Then if you do a post saying, look how wonderful we are, you'll see it collapse and they'll vanish, because we can spot sales and promotion a mile off, and people buy from people. It's about relationships. The thing that will get this account to move is a relationship. So attention. Now we start to do intentional content, and LinkedIn's really good at this, because with LinkedIn, what you can do, not only can you put content out there and people bite and you get metrics and you get visibility of the companies who are seeing it, LinkedIn Smart Links, which most people don't know exists, is actually a really clever, I was going to say a smart tool, because when you put content out, not only do you know which companies have looked, you know which person has looked, and you know how long. So you use a pain point marketing asset, you put it out there and literally talk about the pain points, and then you see that, you know, John Doe, category manager for whoever, has spent 4 minutes reading that.
Whereabouts does that get shown, by the way? Where do you get that data?
Let me just flick to LinkedIn quickly and I'll show you. Is my LinkedIn showing okay?
Not yet. Let me know when you want me to cut to it. Yes.
Yeah, it's here now.
Right. Okay. Boom. Right.
So you can see this. I'm in Smart Links here. Now, okay. the smart bit of the way we do this is not the tools. It's the strategy behind it. It's the value and the pains and all of that stuff that make this work. But suffice to say, this is my webinar that I did on Tuesday night, and I put my replay and resources on SmartLinks so people could get them. So as you can see, I've had 152 people view this, and I'll have to do this quick because of GDPR. But now I can see who's looked and how long.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
So I bolt that together with this stuff. So my posts are agitating. And then I use the intention content and I put that out that's really agitational. And it's almost like diagnostic content. Think about it like that. You're helping people understand the problems they're facing better. Now, it takes a bit of work to get your head around how to do this. And bluntly, that's what companies hire me for now. But once you do it, you actually find the real issues, and then you just follow that issue and say, hey, I spotted you looked at it. Can we have a conversation about this? Because I think we can help you fix it.
With you, and of course, this content is what marketing is then producing specifically because you've collectively said, right, this is what we need. Please, could you make some awesome stuff? Because this is going to be directly helping us hook and land this target client.
Yeah. And the key bit is the day-to-day posting is where you can test, like acid test it. Okay. So you acid test it in the day-to-day posting of the rep, effectively. And then when you start to see the resonance, then you roll to the intentional content. All the while, they're seeing us, you know, not every day, but most days, these prospects are seeing us. And so we're doing that whole awareness piece, that reach piece where they start to know us, they start to like us, they start to see that we make sense. And so we're, you know, people underestimate the power of being seen by people on a regular basis. And that can build a lot of trust, a lot of credibility just by being seen. And that's massively underrated. So you do that first, then start talking about the pain points that you think about it, test them, tweak them. And when you find the sweet spot, you then go to the next bit.
Perfect. Wow. I suppose now would be a good time. If by chance you have got a question and you would like to put this to Dean right now, kind of a Dean's doctor's surgery of sales marketing awesomeness, we'll call it that for today. Then put your comment comment and question in the comments box now, depending on what platform you're on. And I'll put that to Dean. Here we go. Regular friend of the show, Paul Simon Mackey. He's saying, I need to move the comment here. Here we go. No, like trust. Qualifying the client's pain points with your research. Yeah. Cost of inaction as you twist the knife on their pain. He likes your analogy. your northern analogy. Quantify the cost of not making the decision and value proposition content that gives direct pain relief directly targeted to your targeted client.
I'd just add to Paul Simon's there. What he said there is absolutely spot on, but the secret bit is getting the client or prospect to add that cost of inaction up by themselves, because nobody trusts a salesperson. Even if you're the most honest salesperson, nobody trusts you. I'm sorry. So if you can ask them questions, right? And I've always found this really useful. If you ask a series of questions to people, and try this in your own post, by the way. Try and go and do this. Write a post on LinkedIn. And the first two lines ask two questions, two pain point questions, and watch your views change.
Really?
And the reason being is when you ask questions, people think, and they come up with their own answer in their own head. And they don't have to believe you then. They have to believe themselves.
That's an interesting concept to take on board. Okay, right. So I suppose we could set this almost like as homework for everyone to try. So it's asking two pain point questions. Do you ask the questions at the same time in the same post, or do you spread that over, for example, two posts?
No. The key thing is to literally turn that knife as much as you can possibly turn it in one post. Yeah. So I'd start with something... we talk about stopping power. So on a post, you have to create stopping power. In other words, get people to stop scrolling. That's about a visual. that grabs their attention. This is where marketing people will probably say I'm the Antichrist, because you can't use branded content to do this. Mm-hmm. Because everything's becoming more humanized. And as soon as people see a brand, they go, oh, it's ads, move on. Mm. So you use an image that will gather attention. So I know full well, if I want to get the attention of a salesperson, I will use a picture of Leonardo DiCaprio on LinkedIn.
Okay.
It works. Okay. Yeah. So you test these things, but the first two lines in a post are the most important. So ask two pain point questions. Yeah. Agitation method. Ask one question that's a frustration. Ask a second question that's related that's a frustration. And then let the see more go, you know, let the preview stop there so that then they have to click see more to read the rest. And then you literally describe why that situation's happening and all the frustrations, and maybe two lines, one of how you've experienced and helped clients with this before, and one whereby, you know, this is how you help such and such a client. Real short and sweet, but just really rub the salt in the wound in that post. Hashtag it by the industries you think they're in. Forget your own hashtags. Forget your industry hashtags. Forget the topic hashtags. Use the hashtags that you think their industry's in. So if I'm trying to talk to marketers, I'll put hashtag marketing. I won't do anything about hashtag sales. I want to target marketers with that pain point post. Just do it. And I watch what happens. The more you twist that knife, the more inbound you get.
Got it. I put two and two together, by the way, when you said put a picture of Leonardo DiCaprio. That threw me for a second. But then I realized you're most likely talking about the Wolf of Wall Street. That's Leonardo DiCaprio, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
And the reason, remember, hopefully some of you watch Line of Duty on Sunday night, right? Did you watch it?
I don't watch normal TV. I'll put my hands up on that one.
Line of Duty brought to a halt on Sunday night. Okay. Yeah. So some of you've watched this. The biggest weapon you've got, and this is actually a marketing tool that if you can teach salespeople this, they'll be unstoppable. Mm. And it's this, the cliffhanger. Yeah. Every Netflix series, everything they do, they build up to a season finale where there's a cliffhanger keeping you on edge so you watch the next thing. The best thing a marketing person can teach a salesperson is the ability to give enough, but to create more curiosity so that people want more. And that's the key. So when you do your post and you don't give the answer and you don't explain how wonderful you are and how you can fix it, they come back and say, you've just described our problem exactly. Because they want to know more. They're curious. Curiosity kills cats and attracts prospects.
Does indeed. You've reminded me of quite an old adage that is what a good storyteller always leaves the audience wanting more. And yeah, that's what you're very much advocating right there.
And marketing can teach salespeople this.
Goodness. Naturally, no salesman would ever admit to being able to be taught something by marketing. It's just that I guess that must be a bit of an unspoken thing that's happening then in that case.
It might be a case of have you ever thought of? And the great thing about
doing it, yeah.
The great thing about salespeople is they are creatures of habit. So once something works, they want to do it again and again and again and again. So if you can get it to happen once, they'll love you forever.
As it should be, right? Okay. Could you give us please some pointers for success for getting this started, this type of campaign up and off mm-hmm. the ground? So essential pointers for success for nailing this.
Number one. The pain points, map the pain points. So the easiest way to do it is do a brain dump of all of the specific benefits your product or service can give to that particular account. Brain dump everything. Make it as real world scenario as you can think for that company. Then flip it round and go, if that's what they want, what are they having to put up with right now? What are they living with right now? Yeah. So that's the first step. Step two, now go and do pain point posts on LinkedIn and post about it, but make sure you're connected to that company. Don't need to pitch, just interact with them to get them to connect with you. Build some relationships beforehand, liking and post, commenting on their posts so they'll connect with you. And then just do these posts and see what happens. And when you get the sweet spot is they rise all the way to the top, that company's right at the top and you know you've hit the mark, then test it a couple more times, then make your intentional content. Step three, make the intentional content, share it. And then step four, your salesperson just follows up on that to schedule a call. Now that's the simplistic version, but that's something people can do right now.
With you. I should ask, in that case, are you tagging them in those posts when
nope.
you do these?
No.
Nope. Okay.
If I continue to interact with them on LinkedIn, liking and commenting, interacting, viewing their profiles, all of that kind of stuff, they're viewing my profiles, the algorithm kind of senses that you kind of like each other. So it starts to preference you seeing their posts and they seeing your posts.
Right. I think that's a very important point and concept to grasp there. So that's very much,
strategic engagement.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And also having the algorithms work to your benefit. But I guess at the same time, that's also why the algorithms are programmed in that way, because the platform will want people who do know and like each other to interact and for your content, if you're you know, up there, to be shown more regularly to them.
So we all know of confirmation bias. Yeah. Mm. We've all heard of it. We've all experienced it. We've all seen it.
Mm.
So cynically, I'm going to say, why can't we use it to our own advantage?
That's nice. Yes. Putting its to use for the purpose of landing that big potential client or potential account. Nice. Okay. Well, I guess in that case, that's everything pretty much covered. I've been very much a fan of this concept right from the start. So could I leave us with the following then? Or rather, could I throw it over to you to... what would you like the audience to have as a core takeaway from today's show?
That if you can show a company, however big, that you understand their problem and get them to realize how significant a problem it is, and they can have something else, and you can agitate that oil tanker turns pretty quick.
Boom, right there. There you go. That beautifully wraps up winning big accounts quickly. I think you really delivered on that promise. Just wow. Well, hey, Dean Seddon, live from Plymouth in the beautiful southwest of England. Thank you ever so much for joining me today. Really appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, absolute pleasure. And if you've enjoyed watching, then please do, if you haven't already, www.the414.net to subscribe by email so that you get a weekly email and you never miss an episode. Right there. And you can also check out all previous episodes. Failing that, if you're on LinkedIn, hit follow for the 414 podcast company page. There we go. Well, hey, every week I'll be here interviewing some of the greatest and most interesting minds in B2B marketing so that you can directly expand and enhance your professional knowledge with every single episode. Today's been an absolute corker. Massive thank you to Dean. My name's James Rostance, and I look forward to seeing you here same time next week.